are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock back again with you on this Tuesday edition, a Tuesday mailbag show, as we have been doing throughout the season. Got a lot of questions to get to, both email and Twitter. If you ever want to get involved, just say hi, whatever. Find me on Twitter at BDPeacock. Email the show, LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. You can subscribe, rate, review this podcast on all of your favorite podcast apps. You can find all the shows here on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On NFL, which I also co-host daily alongside former NFL scout Matt Williamson. We break down the entire league there. Here we're talking 49ers. Got a ton of questions to get to here, so I'll see how many I can get to. And within a week of the trade deadline, I think there is a lot of speculation right now, and I think more teams are willing to make deals. I think the NFL trade deadline is more fun than it used to be, and I think a lot of people don't even know when it is. In Major League Baseball, it's August 31st, right? Everybody knows that. In the NFL, it's the Tuesday after Week 8, so we are exactly 1 week out now from the NFL's trade deadline here. Of course, the Carolina Panthers coming to Levi's Stadium this weekend, which is a massive game. 4-2 Panthers, 6-0 49ers, but there are some questions still about the 49ers, and not a lot you can take away from the Mud Bowl that was Week 7 in Washington. And, you know, nice for the 49ers to get out of there with the win and have fun slipping and sliding all over that field. And it sounds like maybe some of those Washington Redskins players were not happy about the 49ers celebrating in that way on their field, but obviously the last statement in that conversation always goes, well, scoreboard, if you don't want us to celebrate here, don't allow us to win the game. But I think it was a lot of fun. I think it brought the kid out of a lot of 49ers. And I remember back in my day, and I used to love playing mud football. Back in Visalia, California, I would get my friends on the horn, and it doesn't rain a ton in California, and it was usually around this time in October. You'd get your first rain of the season, and everyone would get on the phone and be like, okay, what time? Let's go. Let's meet up. You'd put on your long johns, put on your sweatshirt, go out there and tromp around in the mud, go play tackle football with no pads. It was so fun, and I believe the 49ers felt that way. You could feel that coming out, the exuberance. They felt like kids out there going out there and playing football in the mud like we all used to do as kids. And it was great. I loved playing tackle football in the mud. No pads. It didn't matter. It didn't hurt. It didn't hurt to hit the ground. You could slide. It was sloppy and weird, and it was fun. And so that's the vibe I got from that football game. So it was really cool. And it was actually, I think, good for the 49ers in a way to learn that they could win in that way, in an odd, sloppy, defensive, you know, old school football game, because it had been since, I don't remember what the date was, since 1970 something, that there had been a game that was that low scoring that finished in that amount of time. And I think it was 10 years since there had been any games that finished in that amount of time, about two hours and 36 minutes for that game to conclude. And that game went really fast, and it was odd. The first half lasted like an hour. But very interesting, very fun game for the 49ers in Washington to come away with a win 9-0 and be 6-0 right now and really positioned well heading into the meat of their schedule. And I know a lot of people think that it wasn't a huge victory winning on the road in Washington, and it hasn't been a huge victory winning on the road in Tampa Bay or in Cincinnati, or some people are even skeptical about the Browns and the Rams that the 49ers dominated. So I don't know what you can do at this point. You can only beat the teams that are on your schedule. This week on the schedule, it is the 4-2 Panthers, who are playing extremely well, even with Cam Newton out and backup quarterback Kyle Allen, who is unbeaten, similar to how Teddy Bridgewater's been unbeaten for the Saints without Drew Brees. So a ton of backup quarterbacks playing this season, which is one of the really big storylines for the NFL season. So can he keep it up? Can he come to San Francisco and beat the 49ers with that defense. It's going to be a fun game and a nice little barometer again for the 49ers, and I think a true test. And on that note, we've got a question from Andrew in the mailbag via email. He says, this week against the Panthers, I think it's super important to look at how the Buccaneers handled Christian McCaffrey in their two games against them this season. Not sure if you've seen the stats, but they make for very interesting reading. Week two, this is Bucs at Panthers. 16 carries for 37 yards, 2.3 yards per carry. Week six, McCaffrey had 22 carries for only 31 yards, 1.4 yards per carry. Do you think we will be able to have a similar success against him considering the level of play we are getting from our front seven? Yeah, and those 2 weeks are crazy because Christian McCaffrey and his other 5 weeks this year have gone nuts on the league. And Christian McCaffrey has been one of the best players in the NFL. There's MVP talk around Christian McCaffrey. He's winning people fantasy football weeks. But the Buccaneers have proven to be one of the best run-defending teams in the NFL. They're really good against the 49ers in week one against the run. So is that personnel? Is that scheme? Have the Buccaneers showed the 49ers a blueprint to beating, potentially, the Carolina Panthers and limiting Christian McCaffrey's success? And I think the 49ers, to answer your question, are really set up well to have success because of their front seven against the Carolina Panthers and make that young quarterback who's getting his first extended bit of starting NFL experience right now, give him a lot of problems and make him make some mistakes. And that's what the 49ers have done so far this year with their front seven while stopping the run on their way to the quarterback. But yeah, Christian McCaffrey is a unique challenge for those in the Bay Area who have watched him for a very long time, dating back to his days at Stanford. That's not easy to do. And even if you have the blueprint, that might be difficult because he can beat you in so many ways. He can beat you between the tackles. He can beat you outside. He can beat you in the passing game. And he's been a huge part of their offense, but I think the 49ers are well equipped to face that team against the Panthers, you know, at home. And I think it's a good challenge, but I think the 49ers stack up well against it. And maybe they can learn some things from the Buccaneers on how they completely squashed the run game against the Panthers in those 2 weeks. So that's a good point, Andrew. Okay, there's a very popular topic, numerous emails and tweets about potential trades for the 49ers we will get to next. This episode is brought to you in part by Greg's Tax Service. Honest and straightforward, Greg's Tax Service has been in the business for 25 years. They can help with any number of tax problems, including unfiled returns, back taxes, IRS collection, and audit representation. Find out more at gregstaxservice.com. Let's go to Mike. There's a lot of questions here about the 49ers wide receivers and who they might try to trade for. Mike has a long email. Actually, let's go to first. This is from James on Twitter. He says, wide receiver Keenan Allen for a first. To the email from Mike. And by the way, the was from James's tweet, not from me. And to Mike's email, he says, hey, Brian, just discovered your podcast at the beginning of the season. And now I listen to every episode. Great work. Thank you, Mike. I love hearing that stuff, so I appreciate you letting me know. He goes on to say, I know you've talked a lot about the possibility of AJ Green and Emmanuel Sanders being the likeliest trade pickups, but what would it take to get a guy like Keenan Allen, for example? Keenan isn't a free agent until 2021, and his salary is around $11 million per year. Given AJ's injury at the moment, do you think Keenan Allen or similar Stephon Diggs, Mike Evans, etc., or somebody of that caliber could be made available for the right price? I feel like if the 49ers picked up a game wrecker at wide receiver, it would be huge. The rest of the team is playing at such a high level, just needs a little boost at wide receiver. This is Mike, who says he's AKA Explosivo. I don't know why he's Explosivo, but thank you very much, Explosivo, for the email question. First, Stephon Diggs not going to be available anymore. He's happy now in Minnesota. They're winning games. They have their own focus right now on winning the NFC North, going to the playoffs and doing their own thing. So Stephon Diggs, not an option. Mike Evans, I'd be super surprised I mean, if you are the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you're trying to build around Mike Evans. He's too good and too young still at this point. But the emergence of Chris Godwin, maybe that could help make one of those two available. Maybe even Godwin's available because they can't pay both. I don't know. That's interesting. But I feel like that'd be more of an offseason move than an in-season deadline type of a move by the Bucs. Keenan Allen is an interesting one because I wouldn't have thought he would ever be available. But at this point, with the way that the Chargers season is going, they're 2-5 now, not playing well, you can't just tear down the team around Phillip Rivers, right? I don't know. They're going in a new stadium that's getting built in LA. I haven't heard any rumors or rumblings that they would be willing to trade someone like Keenan Allen. And like you mentioned, he's not getting that much money for the caliber of player he is. So it'd probably take a lot. And Keenan Allen's not a super athletic, like downfield, sort of outside the numbers type of wide receiver. He gets a lot of his work in the slot. The 49ers don't run a lot of three wide receiver sets. So I don't know if the fit is great there. Maybe Keenan Allen would be a better fit for, say, the Patriots. And I love Keenan Allen, don't get me wrong. The toughness, his ability to separate in short areas and move the chains, like he's the number one guy I'd be looking for on third downs, maybe in the entire NFL with his brand of football. But he's not exactly what I think the 49ers might need at this point in time. But obviously, if he's available, you have to talk about that because he's too good. Shadow 49er, by the way, in 2013, I believe was the Vance McDonald pick. I don't know. I don't know if Keenan's available. It would take a lot. You were talking first rounders. I just think the impact you could get from AJ Green or even Emmanuel Sanders, you would pay less to get the similar impact for a short term. So that's why those guys make more sense than Keenan Allen to me. But if Keenan Allen was available, I think you'd have to have those conversations. But when I look at a trade for what it would cost to get AJ Green, what it should cost to get AJ Green, now I don't know what they would be asking. And the Bengals have that weird skeleton front office where they barely have a GM. Like, I don't know what status the Bengals are at, but if they're smart, they would be trying to trade off some assets and add draft picks. And if you're AJ Green, you're definitely not trying to re-sign in Cincinnati in the offseason, right? So you're going to walk. So at that point, the Bengals would get a late third round compensatory pick. So you're talking about a late third is what you have to beat if you're trying to trade for AJ Green. Would, you know, like, because the 49ers don't have a second this year, would you trade a fourth this year plus a 2021 second? So that would be, that comp pick would be in 2021. Would that be enough for the Bengals to trade AJ Green knowing that they're probably not going to be able to re-sign him and get a second round pick instead of a third that they would get as a comp pick and then also get a fourth round pick this year? If I'm the 49ers, I probably am not trading a first for any of these guys because I just think those first round picks are too valuable, and then maybe you can recoup some picks utilizing that first round draft pick that you have. If you're the 49ers, trading down, adding more picks to recoup some of those picks that you might trade elsewhere, recouping already a second rounder that you don't have because you traded it for D Ford, which was a fine trade because D Ford is making a huge impact for the 49ers. And it's a big part of why the 49ers are really good right now is because of that outside pass rush and players like D Ford. And it also goes to show you that, look, trade second rounders for great players because they impact your football team. So that's the argument for trading for someone like AJ Green or whoever might be available at the wide receiver position. And a lot of the talk about Jimmy Garoppolo and maybe how he's not playing at a level or putting up the numbers that people want him to be putting up as a quarterback. I think if you're going to put blame on Jimmy Garoppolo, I think the number one thing is you're looking at touchdowns and interceptions. In the red zone, they haven't been great and they haven't been throwing for points. He's got 7 touchdowns and 6 picks, and the interceptions are too many. So he's throwing too many interceptions. So that critique is fair. But if you're talking about stretching the field, putting the ball outside the numbers, I think you can put a little bit of blame on Garoppolo for that, but you have to put equally as much blame on the play caller and the system and Kyle Shanahan, and you have to put equally as much blame on the wide receivers and those playmakers outside that are still young and still developing in Debo and Dante Pettis and in Marquise Goodwin, who's a fine player, but I don't think you would put Marquise Goodwin in the category of the guys we're talking about the 49ers potentially trading for. So if you can make a big upgrade outside, I think that could only help the 49ers and it would make a ton of sense. But the 49ers obviously have a 6-0 football team for a reason right now. They shouldn't panic. They don't have to make a huge deal. And if the right deal presents itself and makes sense, then you've got to do it. And if you're the 49ers, if I was in charge, I would absolutely offer, say, a fourth this year and a 2021 second rounder for A.J. Green. And that's a lot more than what the Bengals are going to get if they let A.J. Green walk. And even if the 49ers can't re-sign A.J. Green or don't even want to sign A.J. Green, they would potentially get that late third round compensatory pick back when he does walk. So you would have that extra bit of value coming back, and A.J. Green would help you now. He would be an absolute upgrade. He's getting healthy. It looks like he's about a week out from being able to play, which is perfect timing for a team that might want to trade for him. And maybe he would actually even increase the ceiling of some of those young players that you're trying to develop currently on the roster. Make them better now, and even if you let him walk, those players are now better in 2020 and beyond because they got a chance to play with someone who's an all-pro caliber receiver in A.J. Green for a short time. I don't think there's any downside to trading for A.J. Green. If the Bengals are willing to trade him for what I think the Bengals should be willing to trade him for, are they? And are the Bengals willing to deal is another question that I just don't have the answer to. But the 49ers should absolutely be trying as hard as they can to upgrade without trying to give away a first-round pick. I think that's the easiest way to put it for the Niners right now for the next week heading toward that deadline. Speaking of comp picks, let's go to Hey Drude on Twitter. He says, you mentioned no Armstead next year, too expensive. With 1 year left on Thomas's four-year contract, do the 49ers fill the fourth spot with him on the D-line next season or look elsewhere? I'm enjoying this year, but your comment got me thinking. Yeah, so Armstead's playing his way into a nice little contract in the offseason that the 49ers probably cannot spend on with all the resources they've spent on defensive ends and defensive tackles recently. You've got to re-up Buckner. You spent a lot of money on D Ford already, and you have the number two overall pick in Nick Bosa, who currently, you know, makes a nice little salary as such a high draft pick and will probably have to be re-upped at some point. So you can't spend insane money on your defensive line. So Armstead's the obvious one. You let him play out the year and play awesome, and you let him walk. And then maybe you get another compensatory draft pick there for him signing with another team. I think that's just the only way you can play that. And then now you have Solomon Thomas, who has a four-year contract, but he also has the fifth-year option. And the fifth-year option for a number three overall pick for Solomon Thomas is going to be quite high, but you still have that opportunity to have another player who could just slide right into Armstead's role, play an outside-in situation where he's a run defender as a defensive end on early downs, jumps inside. We've seen him play his best as an inside interior rusher, which is, I think, where he is his best. And I think that's just the obvious way to let this thing play out. Let Armstead walk, collect comp picks, let Thomas play out his contract. You can't spend on him, I don't think, for a long-term deal, so you let him walk. Maybe you get a comp pick in a couple years for Solomon Thomas, or who knows, but you have some nice coverage there on the defensive line for quite a while now, and I think that's just the obvious way to let that thing play out, and I think it plays out nicely because you still have Julian Taylor, and you still, I think you could re-sign probably Ronald Blair at a pretty bargain price for someone who's a reserve but an impactful player. And so he's the guy I would probably spend on if I was trying to spend on another lineman that isn't named DeForest Buckner sometime soon. You still have Sheldon Day there. You still have DJ Jones. So you still have a nice rotation of players there as you let these guys naturally walk away and spend the money on the players who I think are the most impactful. And I think the three guys you have to spend on, and you're currently spending on the guy you just traded a second round pick for the right to sign a contract with in D Ford, and then eventually you got to sign Nick Bosa down the road, and pretty soon you got to give a lot of money to DeForest Buckner. And then on the other side of the ball, you've got to sign the best tight end in the NFL, I think, in George Kittle. And with the money the tight ends make, I think that's such a no-brainer. You give him whatever it takes, and he will make the most money that any tight end has ever made, and that's totally fine because it still pales in comparison to some other positions and what those positions make for the impact that George Kittle brings you on a down-by-down basis for the run game, the pass game, whatever. George Kittle, pay him all the money. Buckner is a little bit more difficult because you can't pay him at an Aaron Donald level, I don't think. But he's going to want insane money. So that one might get difficult. I think he might play out his fifth-year option, and then things will get interesting. And potentially, with Buckner, you have the franchise tag in play. But yeah, Buckner's definitely not going anywhere for a while, but that one might be just a little bit more of a difficult contract negotiation than some of the other positions. But I think it's pretty obvious the way the 49ers have to play that one on the defensive line, thinking long-term and who they pay and who they don't pay. And yeah, Armstead, you just let him walk. Thomas, he hasn't earned, I don't think, what a number three overall pick would have earned, you know, on the free agent market, what you would have to pay him. I think you have to let him walk eventually and maybe not pick up his fifth-year option. That'll be an interesting one for a number three overall pick. I think it's going to be like $15 million. Eric Armstead's currently making $9 million on his fifth-year option for a first-rounder who was picked number 15 a couple years before, so it's definitely going to be a lot higher than that for Solomon Thomas. Do you even pick up that fifth-year option? The 49ers, I believe, have to make that decision around March or sometime in the spring this year, or else he'll be walking into his contract year next season. And but that would make sense as well, and I think that would be fine too. But you just know that you have Armstead and Thomas this year. You have Thomas next year to fill in for Armstead's spot. You have some young players. You have a lot of talent on the defensive line. I think it's the last thing you have to worry about for the 49ers, but at some point you're going to have to pay some money for some of these younger players like Buckner and eventually Bosa. So you got to plan for it. But then in 2021, we'll have a new collective bargaining agreement. I mean, the salary cap's already going up and up and up as it is. Is it going to have an exponential jump there in 2021? And the salary cap, a lot of people already talk about how it's fake and doesn't matter. So is it going to be just stupid? So it doesn't matter at all? You can pay anybody anything at some point? I don't know. We'll find out. But as far as who you pay, I think the 49ers are in a really good spot. They need to keep collecting very good players and worry about having the problem of who to pay later. Okay, there was numerous people that asked questions about the wide receiver and the trade stuff, so I count that as knocking out about a dozen questions, even though I've really only answered two questions on today's show. So here in segment three, I'll try to go rapid fire and answer more questions faster. This podcast is brought to you in part by Roman. The folks at Roman, a men's health company, are changing the game with Roman Swipes. The secret to lasting longer in the bedroom, get $10 off your first order of Swipes and free two-day shipping at GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. Are you losing sleep at night over your unfiled tax returns or the large amount you owe the IRS or any other state tax agency? Does it feel like you're trapped and that these tax problems will never go away? Are you worried the IRS will garnish your bank account or your wages? Do you want to be free and put these tax problems behind you? Greg's Tax Service is your local tax resolution specialist. Greg's Tax Service has been in the business for over 25 years and is passionate about helping their clients resolve their tax issues and to get them all the deductions and credits they're entitled to when preparing their tax returns. Call or text Greg's Tax Service at 925-778-4871 to set up an appointment to find out the best options available to free you from your tax problems. Again, that's 925-778-4871. Call or text to set up an appointment. And if you qualify, they can help you settle with the IRS for less than the full amount you owe. Remember, Greg's Tax Service for all your tax needs. Greg's Tax Service is your local tax advocate standing up and defending the rights of taxpayers. Find them online at gregstaxservice.com. By the way, I had numerous people on Twitter tell me that I called Julian Taylor, Julian Peterson, on yesterday's podcast. So definitely slipped up there. And yeah, maybe seeing visions of a former 49ers playmaker in Julian Taylor. So apologies to Julian Taylor for messing that up and calling him Julian Peterson. But I think everyone would agree that is a huge compliment. And definitely love what I'm seeing from Julian Taylor, which, by the way, talking about what our last conversation was there, just a minute ago, the 49ers, the riches they have on the defensive line is insane because Julian Taylor is a monster. Let's go to Will on Twitter. He says, Jimmy G appears to have been struggling this year if you look at the stat sheet, but if you watch the games, I wouldn't say he's been playing bad football. do you think it's time to seriously consider getting him some wide receiver help? So I've talked about the wide receiver help part, and I think, yes, you make your team as good as you possibly can. So if the right deal is there, you absolutely go for it to get Garoppolo some help on the outside. But I agree. Jimmy Garoppolo has not been playing bad football. If you want to say he's been playing mediocre, been playing, you know, middle of the road starting NFL caliber football, I don't think I'll fight you too much on that. But I will say that Jimmy Garoppolo has been winning football games 12-2 as a starter for the 49ers. I'm not a QB wins guy, but when you consider that with the same group of talent for, you know, all the games before these last six, talking about 2017 and 2018, someone like C.J. Beathard's 1-9 as a starter or whatever he is, I think there's a clear jump in talent there, and Jimmy Garoppolo is plays a winning brand of football. I think he gets the ball out quick. He's completing, what, 68% of his passes this year. Like I mentioned earlier, you would want the interceptions to come down. You want the touchdowns to come up. You would love to see some more big plays spreading the ball outside. I think a lot of that is the scheme. I think some of it is on Jimmy G. I think some of it's on Shanahan. And I think some of it's on his playmakers on the outside. I've got no problems with Jimmy Garoppolo. I think he's really good. I think he's plenty good for the 49ers right now. And obviously, they're 6-0 with Jimmy Garoppolo. But I think there is a little bit of an incomplete grade with Jimmy G. Let's see where he is in a few weeks as he's gotten more reps now. This is his most extended run as a starting quarterback in the NFL. So let's see him get better. And there's going to be a game where the 49ers need Jimmy G to put the team on his back. Let's see if he can do it, and then we'll talk again. So that's what I would say about Jimmy Garoppolo's progression as an NFL quarterback. Quick shout out to Nico from Brisbane, Australia, who had similar sentiments about Jimmy Garoppolo, saying so far he's been inconsistent, but not necessarily bad. But at some point, the run game is not going to be able to bail him out, and he's going to have to put the team on his back with his passing ability. And so far, yeah, he's not done that. Yeah, and I agree. And pretty much summing up what I just said. So, Nico, shout out to you. I just wanted to read your email there and say thank you for being a listener over there in Australia. I know we have a ton of listeners in Australia, and there's some optimism and skepticism at the same time with Jimmy Garoppolo, and I understand fans that might have both of those feelings at the same time with Jimmy G, and I kind of do too. I'm optimistic about him, but there's still some things you need to see, and there's still some development happening with Jimmy Garoppolo, and I totally get that. But at the same time, if anybody's trying to take anything away from that Week 7 game in Washington on that sloppy field, it's just so hard. You just can't really evaluate from that game. So I think we'll learn a lot more here in Week 8 with the Panthers coming to town. They've got a nice little defensive line that's going to be coming after Jimmy Garoppolo. It's going to be a fun matchup, I think, for the 49ers. And we'll learn a lot more about the 49ers beating another team with a winning record. They haven't faced that many teams with a winning record this year, so it's fair to point that out. Let's go to an email from Anthony, a frequent emailer and frequent listener who apparently also listens to my podcast, Locked On NFL. So shout out, Anthony. Thank you for listening twice a day to me, and I apologize for forcing that much of myself onto you. He says, last week on Locked On NFL, Matt Williamson said the Panthers have the best pass rush in the league. The weakness of the 49ers is still the O-line, and Brunskill in particular looked very bad in the Mud Bowl at FedEx last week. It just has me concerned. Do the 49ers have what it takes on the offensive line to enforce the run game and protect the quarterback on passing downs? Also, the wide nine is weak against the run, at least before Saleh starts making adjustments. Christian McCaffrey coming back to the Bay Area might have him emotionally primed for a big game. Will the wide nine be able to contain McCaffrey? Two things. First, let's go to, and thank you for listening to both Locked On 49ers and Locked On NFL, Anthony. And I think Williamson, when he said the Panthers have the best pass rush in the league, he said they might have the best pass rush in the league because he thought, you know what, maybe the 49ers might have the best pass rush in the league. But you're right. It's a big test for the 49ers offensive line. But from what I've seen from school, from Brunskill filling in for Staley and McGlinchey, I haven't been worried about it. I sort of just erased that from my mind thinking, gosh, these guys that have been plugged in, and the same goes for Emmanuel Mosley on defense, plugging in at cornerback. These guys have played so good, and the system in place and the players around them are so good, it has helped them play to a level where I have not worried about them at all. And if Brunskill, well, it wasn't Brunskill against against the Browns, it was School and it was McGlinchey. If you could face that pass rush and Myles Garrett and come out okay, I'm not worried about what the Panthers are going to bring. They're going to bring a rush and they're going to put pressure on Jimmy Garoppolo. But one thing about Jimmy Garoppolo is he's been really good under pressure. If you want to talk about, and a lot of people have, you know, don't like the numbers he's putting up, and you know, he's not putting up fantasy football type numbers. He's not pressing the ball down the field or maybe outside the numbers as much as they like. But one thing that Jimmy Garoppolo has done extremely well this year and in his career is get the ball out quick, and he has been really good in the face of a pass rush, and he was having free blitzers against the Steelers in his face, getting the ball out. And I think in a lot of ways you're helping Jimmy Garoppolo. You're playing into his strength if you're bringing extra rushers and leaving fewer people in coverage against Garoppolo, because he'll find that. He'll get the ball out and he can throw darts. Where you could, I think, really cause some problems for Garoppolo, and this is pretty much true of any quarterback in the NFL, and we've seen it with Patrick Mahomes recently. We've seen it in the past with all the best quarterbacks. We've seen it in the Super Bowl with the New York Giants beating the Patriots and Tom Brady. The best way you can beat just about any quarterback in the NFL, and it's what the 49ers are doing right now, is if you can create constant pressure with your front four and cover with everybody else, that makes things very hard on quarterbacks in the NFL. So it is going to be a big test for School if Joe Staley's not back. And it looks like the latest, according to Kyle Shanahan, is Joe Staley might be back actually this Sunday. It's still up in the air, but it's not out of the question that Staley could play. Do you put School at right tackle? Do you keep Brunskill in there? I think they're pretty similar as far as talent level goes between Brunskill and Justin School, and I've been fine with how both of those guys have played. But you're right, Anthony. It's going to be a test. It's going to be a big test for the 49ers to slow down that pass rush, for Garoppolo to get the ball out quickly and accurately in the face of potential pressure. And on the other side of the ball, as you mentioned, Christian McCaffrey presents a very unique challenge for opposing defenses, but there is a blueprint out there that the Bucs have showed multiple times, and the 49ers have been pretty good, with the exception of a few drives here and there against the run, and the front seven is a strength of that team. I like the matchup. I like the way it's matching up for the 49ers, even though the Panthers are a very good team and have proven that even without Cam Newton, they are one of the better teams in the NFC. Okay, out of time here. Thank you, everybody, for getting involved in the mailbag. My apologies if I didn't get to you. Some people I bookmarked to get to with Nick on Thursday, and we will talk more Panthers tomorrow with Bill Rossetti, host of Locked On Panthers, in another crossover episode right here, Locked On 49ers.